So I was recently asked by a coach if there was one metric upon which to measure culture, only one, what would it be? For me, it's relationships. Now, I'm not sure exactly how to measure that fully. I know with some of the teams that we work with, we use Google surveys to get team members to reflect. We also track the number of intentional and quality one-on-ones that a coach has with their players. And these are just some ways to reflect and measure the investments in those relationships. Regardless, I know the culture comes down really to the quality of relationships. So today I'm excited to have on the podcast Dr. Jerry Lynch. He's not just a mental performance coach or sports psychologist. He's kind of like a relationship guru. He consults with amazing coaches like Steve Kerr, Anson Dorrance, and Phil Jackson over the years. And he's also the author of 15 books, books that I love. And in all his work with these coaches and in his writing, I think at the core of what he helps us do as coaches is to build relationships. Relationships that are built on love, and we do it in a way that's authentic and true to ourselves. Now, we had Dr. Jerry Lynch on episodes 173 and 174. Those were some great episodes, and there'll be some links in the details of this episode if you want a quick refresher on Jerry. Today's conversation is going to hone in on the relationships and some of his wisdom for coaches from his latest book, Champion Wisdom. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. My name is JP Nerman, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Nate Sanderson. Check us out at tocculture.com. There you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter, where we offer wisdom around culture and leadership, as well as our very detailed notes on each episode of the podcast. Also, a special thanks to iRyan12 for leaving a review on iTunes, where they said, "This podcast has really challenged me to self-reflect as a leader and a coach. The landscape of coaching and leadership has changed, and we must change with it. I've heard incredible speakers with great vision and examples of what positive, empowering coaching and leadership look like on this podcast. It's a must subscribe." iRyan12 dropped me an email for some free stuff. Appreciate you. And listeners, if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe. You don't want to miss an episode. All right, we're going to hop right into our conversation with Dr. Jerry Lynch. You know, there's an article that I think John O'Sullivan just wrote that came out today about burnout. And I was just reading it this morning here. Coaching is tough. Really, really tough. Stress and burnout are an all-time high. You've been in this world of coaching for a long time, probably longer than I've been alive. I'm just curious from your perspective, have you seen this change? Have you seen a change in coaching, the stress, the pressure? And if so, if you think it's more, what do coaches really need now from your perspective moving forward the next few years?
Okay, let me see if I can remember the essence of everything you just said, because it's just loaded with all kinds of stuff for me. What a setup. Oh my gosh. First thing I want to say is, if I've been around longer than you've been born, how does that make me feel, right? But the truth of the matter is, I did start 58 years ago. You know, at the age of 22, I walked into a high school classroom to teach English literature and to coach basketball, JV basketball, boys basketball. And I thought it was a job, but it wasn't a job. It was really a calling. And I didn't realize that at first. And here I am, 58 years later, more excited, more enthused, more motivated to make a difference without thinking about making a living. And in 58 years, to your point, JP, it's been enormous amount of change. I mean, life. I mean, you know, I remember just reading a book. Actually, the book took place in Iowa, Nate. I forget the name of it now. Anyway, it was a book about the 50s in Iowa and what that was like in the early 50s, and how simple life was, and what's happened now, and how complex it's gotten. You know, jump ahead to 2022, and we have social media, and we have all these other pressures, and everyone knows what you're doing. Everyone knows everything about you. And it's not just local. It's you know, it's all over. And you have these people who are super hypercritical, and it creates pressure. And athletes at all levels, even the professional athletes, clients of mine, you wouldn't even believe how much pressure they have. Coaches are under a tremendous amount of pressure at all levels, high school, college, professional. So, you know, it's a different world. And what hasn't changed is basically people are people and human beings are human beings. And the reason why we coach and the reason why we teach and mentor and guide others is because we know in our calling, which we have, that we can make a difference. And the difference that I make in my life with others is just making suggestions, talking about, you know, the way I see things, my observations and what have you. And one of the things that really jumps off the page for me, like whether it's this book is Mindful Lessons. And I think the operative word there is mindfulness. And to your point, what do I suggest coaches do? It's not so much what they can do, it's how I believe they need to be. It's a very, very important distinction. We can do a lot. We know what to do. In fact, our athletes will forget what we do. Our athletes will forget what we say, but they'll never forget how we make them feel. And feeling is a being, it's a verb. You know, I feel courageous. I feel passionate. I feel grateful. I feel important. I feel relevant. And when you or I, when all of us feel these ways, we perform at higher levels, and the responsibility falls on the shoulders of a coach to create the environment where others can feel elevated emotions, because feelings equal function. Well, let me reel myself back in here. In order to create those feelings, there are certain techniques and certain strategies that I use. But basically, I believe that we all need a lesson in being aware and being mindful of the power of our influence. If there's anything that stands out to me over the last 58 years, it's how much power I have, not over people, but power to influence others. And so I like to boil it down to something really simple. And the coaches and the leaders and the clients and the athletes that I've worked with, when I can get them to a place where they become more aware of the power of that influence, the more they have a say in the outcome. And in order to do that, I'm talking about becoming aware or becoming more mindful. And so this book, when I wrote it, it's 142 lessons. Each lesson helps us to become more mindful of a certain situation that's going on right in front of us that we need to be aware of.
Well, Jerry, I kind of want to follow up on that. Like JP, I've started reading the book and I quickly realized this is not a book to be feasted on. It's a book to be savored, you know, and there's even instructions in the beginning to take it, you know, a day at a time, a couple pages at a time, as you described. But there is a phrase that comes up a couple times early in the book, and I think it ties into what you're sharing here. And that is that your work is described in this ratio here of 35% sports psychology and 65% sports philosophy and spirituality. And I think that's one of the unique angles, certainly, of your work and your perspective on coaching and being, for that matter, is this philosophical spiritual component in this ratio being twice as important as what we typically think of the sports psychology. And I wonder if you could you know, to somebody that maybe hasn't read many of your books, or some of our listeners that, you know, maybe don't have as much exposure to that philosophical spiritual component, what do you mean by that? And why is that so important for coaches?
That's a brilliant, brilliant question. Well thought through and extremely relevant to the work that I do. The percentage of sports psychology, 35%, might even be less than that, because the older I get and the wiser I become, and it's a slow process. My wisdom has been taking me a long time. I'm only halfway there, but I know this for certain, that of all the championship teams I've worked with, every team that I work with is a championship team. They might not win the championship, but they're a championship team. But 115 of those teams got crowned champions. And I know it was because they were spiritually more talented than their opponent. I believe that when you look at what's going on today in the basketball world, for instance, with the Golden State Warriors under the leadership of Steve Kerr, who happens to be a very good friend of mine. We have these conversations all the time. You know, they might not be physically, they are not as physical as the Boston Celtics. They're not as big as the Boston Celtics. But their hearts are bigger. And the heart is the spiritual component of competing. And Steve Kerr as a coach really emphasizes this spirituality, because he's developed a culture that's got very distinct, it's values driven, it's vision driven, excuse me, but it's values based. And those values are all spirituality values: selflessness, competitiveness, being joyful. I'll go down the list of more. When I talk spirituality, again, it's not a religion. It's a way of being. So we're talking about being courageous, being persistent, being patient, having integrity, being selfless. This is the kind of language that I use. And I often ask a group of coaches when I'm working with them, raise your hands if you want your team to be courageous. Raise your hand if you want your team to be resilient, to be fearless. Oh my gosh, everyone raises their hand. These are deep spiritual qualities. These are values that we hold dear. We all have these values as human beings. We have values in our family. We raise our kids with these values. We all crave a higher calling, a higher place. And all I'm doing is I'm finding ways for help people to see things with a perspective from above rather than being in the middle of it all. So looking at things from above, ultimately, it's not about winning and losing. That's a very superficial sports psychology model where I'm going to go in and help a team to win. That's not what I'm doing. What I'm doing is, from the top looking down, is I'm helping them to understand what winning is and what losing is. You know, my teams understand that losing is our greatest teacher, that without loss, we wouldn't become the great athletes that we are. I help them to understand another spiritual quality, and that is, why is our opponent an opponent and not a partner? You know, why are they some people that we have to annihilate and beat into the ground? When indeed, Nate, when you show up and you compete against me and we compete together, what happens is, because you're so good, you bring out my best. So it's a partnership. And it goes back to the Latin word compatiere, the Latin root, which means to seek together. And that's what competition really means, compatiere. And so when I noticed this years ago, it was like a light bulb went on. I was a competitive, internationally competitive athlete. And I realized that getting nervous and worrying about outcomes and results that I couldn't control took away my confidence. When I brought the spirituality of sport into focus, what I noticed then was that I showed up to find out the best version of who I am. And I used you as my competitor to help bring that out. So spirituality is a way of life. And I'm not preaching something like that's dogma. It is the way it is. You know, spirituality is, if you fight swimming upstream, you're going to struggle. If you go with the flow, life is going to be a lot easier for you. And that's true no matter what game you're playing, whether it's the relationship game, the game of sport, or the game of life. So I'm hoping that I address that in a way, Nate, that makes sense. And there's so much more to it. Your question is very deep.
Jerry, I want to dig a little bit deeper on that. And when it comes when it comes to us as coaches, as leaders, and we're trying to distill those values within our team, Steve Kerr is trying to distill that spirituality, that way of being that you talk about. We know this. It has to start with us, right? It has to start with us. That's really challenging. Back to our very first question we asked was just the stress, the pressure. You know, Steve Kerr is in the NBA Finals right now. The pressure and stress that come with that. I don't think any of our listeners here will probably be on a NBA Finals, but they can still relate to stress and pressure of a big game.
Absolutely.
How in our busy seasons, in our within these stressful moments, periods of our life, can we stay grounded in this philosophy, this spiritual way of being towards our players? Because we're so often, we get so caught up in it, we get lost in it, and then we go off track, and then the rest of the team just runs, you know, they get off track, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, there you go again. So what we do is we come right back to the word mindful. If you're not aware on a day-to-day basis of your mission and what your purpose is and what the meaning of all of your work is all about, if you're not aware of that, then we get off track. So an example is this. Let's use a very live example. So I've had communication with Steve recently this week, and they were down 2-1. And everyone knows that if you go down 3-1 in the NBA, you can come back, but it's not very likely you will. So they're down 2-1. And all the media talk about taking you off track and away from being aware. The media is all talking about this is a must-win game. You've got to win it. You must show up and you must beat Boston. Otherwise, your season is over, right? Now, these are human beings. The thing that impresses me about that level of an athlete is not so much their level of physicality, but their level of spirituality, their level of being a human being. And by being a human being, I can guarantee you that no matter how good you are, no matter what your name is, you're going to feel pressure if you're trying to control something that you can't control. That's an awareness factor. So in my conversation with Steve, I was talking about, you know, the more we focus in on having to win that game, the more tight, the more tense, and the more tentative we set ourselves up to become, right? I mean, if I'm trying to control both of you guys here and make you like me, and make sure that I don't make any mistakes, I'm a mess. But if I just show up and control who I am, who I'm being, you know, being genuine, I want to be authentic. I want to be vulnerable. I want to be honest. I want to be prepared. And so The same thing with the Warriors. So when they show up at Boston down 2-1, what they've got to do is be aware of their power to control certain things. Now, here I go, right? So they can all crash the boards. They need to understand rotation. They need to box out. They need to dive for the 50-50 ball. They need to play in-your-face defense. And the list goes on. And there's about 10 things that you can control. And if you're aware that that's what you need to, how you need to be, then it takes away the pressure of having to do something that you cannot do. You cannot win a game. You can win the day. You could win your game plan and go along with it, but you can't show up and win the game. You can't control that. If you did, then why play the game? You know. So, other than the fact that it's a lot of fun,
do you see with those guys? Sorry to jump in, but with a guy like Kerr or Anson Dorrance, you know, Phil Jackson, you know, these guys that you've known, supported over the years. And helped, you know, and all these coaches that you worked with. Do you see some common practices or disciplines within their life that they just won't ever sacrifice? Because if they do, they'll lose their way on that, you know? Does that make sense?
You mean, JP, do they have one thing that seems to be an anchor for them?
Yeah. Do you see some common anchors or? You know, what are some of those anchors that you see? I'm sure they're different. You know, I know Phil Jackson was very big into mindfulness and meditation.
So is Steve Kerr. I've totally been into that. I mean, he learned it when he was with Phil in the Bulls. And, you know, he got that down. And, you know, he's been reading my books for years and really believes in this awareness and mindfulness thing. And Anson, too. Talking with Anson Dorrance at the University of North Carolina and Tara Vanderveer at Stanford and Cindy Timshaw, the winningest lacrosse coach for women now at Navy, but back in the days at Maryland when we won 7 consecutive national championships. They all knew one thing. They're all aware of this. And what they're aware of is on the road to winning a national, a world championship, the most important game that they ever won on that journey was the relationship game. And the relationship game goes back to the whole thing about how do you create a good relationship? Well, I'll tell you what, we have a good relationship because when I leave this broadcast, this podcast, I feel really good. I feel good in your company, both of you. And I'm assuming because we got back on together that you're feeling good with me here too. So it's a feeling game. The relationship game is all about feeling. And Steve Kerr knows that, you know, if Steph Curry feels good, regardless of his output, whether he went 0-9 the night before, 0-9 from 3-point range, he still feels confident. He still feels courageous. He still feels patient and caring and connective. And so Steve, all these great coaches really understand. And part of the reason I have had work in some capacity with these people is because they understand my message, but I also understand where they're coming from and it reinforces each other. But the commonality I find with all of these great coaches who have won championships and who create really good programs and great organizations, they really understand the relationship game. And the relationship game is something to be aware of so that when I walk into a room filled with people, the very first thing I'm aware of is the power of my influence. And that I could light that room up or cast it into darkness. Now, where do you want to go with your team? Do you want to light it up or do you want to cast it into darkness? You know, when your girls show up, Nate, at practice, and if they're in an environment that feels really elevated emotions, feeling grateful and I'm so happy I'm here and feeling optimistic and feeling fearless and important and valued, you're going to get the most out of those people in your life. And that's just, that's a truth. That's not dogma. That just happens to be. And anyone listening to us right now, when you get up in the morning and you get out of bed and you go to the bathroom and you take a shower, if you're feeling pessimistic or you're feeling fearful or you're feeling unprepared or you're feeling lack of confidence or devalued, you'd have to agree with me that that's going to be one lousy day for you, you know. But get up another day and imagine your athletes feeling this way too. Let's be coaches. Imagine your athletes show up to practice and they're grateful and they're courageous. They're optimistic. They feel valued by you. They feel relevant. They feel respected. They feel strong. Wow, that's going to be one hell of a practice. Man, that team's going to have a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot of joy, like they do with the Warriors, a lot of joy. And we're going to get the most out of the people that we're trying to help. So there might be other things, but I'm going to the root. No relationship, no coaching. No relationship, there's nothing there. You've got to start with that. And of course, Phil Jackson and Steve and all these other coaches, and I make this known in this book, is they realize that love is a big part of that. Loving them for being human beings, loving them because their intention is pure, even if they're immature, even if they're fearful. We're all human beings. And once we get that message, boy, we really, really, really can help people. And when I started out 52 years ago, I'm going to be blatantly honest with you. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. Day to day, I struggled and I just tried to figure it out and learn from others. And it's been 58 years and I'm still maybe halfway there. But this I do know. The truth is, my success as a human being is directly related to the relationships that I have in my life and how I nurture and develop those relationships.
Yeah. And I think that's really powerful. And I think you're right in terms of the deep roots that have to happen for, you know, anything else to follow. It's going to start with those relationships and commitment to those relationships. And I want to pull on two threads that are a little bit kind of going in divergent directions here, just based off what you said there. One of them is, I think there's been a lot more attention given to coaches and performers in general about this idea of the imposter syndrome. Our friend Cody Royal wrote a book called The Tough Stuff, and he's got a chapter where, you know, he talks about how as coaches, you know, there's so many times where we can be at the highest level or in the biggest games or have a worthwhile resume, you know, that says we know what we're doing. And yet here we are standing on the sideline and in the back of our mind thinking, I'm not sure what's going on here. I don't know what to do next, you know, or we had Monty Williams on the program a couple of months ago, and he talked about even Greg Popovich, you know, just having moments on the sideline where it's like we blank, you know, we lose our confidence and we lose our way a little bit. When you think about, you know, again, just whether that's a performer or a coach in leadership, the idea that, man, I don't know if I belong here. I don't know if I have what it takes. How do we combat that, you know, as coaches to find that center, that place of confidence where we can be best for our players?
There's so much involved in that question, Nate. It's I'm not even sure where to begin. First of all, I have to say this. I myself feel like an imposter at times. And if I don't say that, then I'm being a double imposter. I think what we are is we're human beings. And when we get put on the big stage, a lot is expected of us. And the expectation factor goes over the top. The higher you go, the more is expected. Not only from others, but from yourself. It comes down to understanding that being an imposter is a feeling that you don't deserve to be there, or that you're not good enough, or you don't have what it takes, or everyone else thinks I'm really great and look what's happening here. Like if Steve Kerr loses this championship, I don't even want to go there, but if he does, you know, is that whole thing like not real, you know? So, you know, I believe it really does come down to, you know, we do a lot of work with Way of Champions, with helping coaches to self-assess, asking yourself questions. A great set of questions is, what do I need to start doing that I'm not doing in order to feel comfortable? The second question is, what do I need to stop doing that I am doing in order to become more comfortable? So this feeling of being an imposter is a feeling of being uncomfortable, a feeling of maybe not even knowing oneself, a feeling of not even understanding what it's like to be a human being and accept that. I think that the whole concept that we're missing oftentimes is the importance of vulnerability. As a coach, as a leader, as a father, as a friend, as an author, I've got to be willing to not know. I just finished reading a book called The Wisdom of Not Knowing. And it really emphasized something I've known for years and years and years, but I've been uncomfortable with, and that is, I always feel I need to know. You go to a doctor and you ask a question, the doctor feels the doctor needs to answer that question. Instead of saying, you know what, I don't really know, I don't have an answer for that, but I know I could find out something about it. So he doesn't have to know it in the moment. A coach is the same way, you know? Tell your athletes, you know, I just don't know, you know? I don't know this. Or, you know, I blew it there. I could have done better, but I really didn't do my best. I know I didn't. And I just, it's something I need to learn to do in those moments. And believe me, I'm working on it, just like all of you guys are working on your sports skills, right? So where this subject matter takes me, I have resistance to the word imposter because, correct me if I'm wrong here, Nate, but it seems like in so many people's mindset that being an imposter is something wrong, as opposed to it's a feeling based on some other human tendency. And the human tendency is, as a coach, is I need to know all. I need, like, I'm on the hot seat right now. You just asked me a question. I need to have an answer for this. And I don't even know if I'm answering it, but what I'm doing is I'm sharing with you what my feelings are and what my heart is saying. And I've got to be willing to be vulnerable, open, to make mistakes, and to embrace the fact that I am a human being. So if I'm a Popovich, yeah, boy, I've got quite a reputation, a good one at that. But I also understand that people need to know who I really am. I'm a human being. I have fears. I have concerns. I have doubts. I have all these things. And to embrace that as a human being and to hold on to that is the height of vulnerability. And to me, the greatest leaders of all time share that one quality of being vulnerable. Being willing to say, like Steve Kerr saying, you know what? That's on me, guys. I wasn't prepared. I didn't prepare you well enough. So what is really wrong with, the question becomes, what is wrong with feeling like you're an imposter? As long as you see it for what it is and where it comes from and becoming more aware and mindful of what's really going on here. And it is okay to not know. In fact, that's the first sign of wisdom in my spiritual view of the world, is the ability to understand that I know very little, and I might not have answers, but I can have observations, and I can share that with you, and that comes from my heart. And I can be afraid, and fear is based on something. Fear is nature's way of helping us understand A, what we don't know, or B, what we can control, and to come to terms with that. Boy, did I go off into intergalactic bliss with that last piece. So reel me back in here. I need to know my zip code. Yeah.
Well, Jerry, I mean, I think, you know, you can call a spade, because I think in your experience, and, you know, JP and I've been doing this 15, 20, 25 years as well, that you're going to get more out of it and get more out of others when you start from a place of love. End of story, right? Whether that's pushing or being demanding or, you know, asking for whatever it is, like if you're starting from a place of love, your effectiveness is going to be greater. Mm-hmm. And that is the truth. Like you said before, it's not dogma. That is the way of the human heart, you know, and connection.
All right. Thanks again to Jerry for coming to the podcast. Check out his book, Champion Wisdom. We'll have links in the details of this episode and the newsletter for you to get your copy. A great book for some in-season reading.